The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Tom, once again, to keep your mission on your mind, your mission, we call it Mission Minded, of course. So Michael Coleman, formerly the Jimmy Hill Mission, now the Montgomery Area Food Bank, that is MAFB.org. You can certainly help out. I know this got through a holiday season. We'll talk to Michael in just a second, find out just how exactly that went. We're going to get into how to measure success in 2023. And I know, Michael, a lot of people always have these types of questions and these types of things whenever you start a new year, because it's whenever the calendar year starts, it's like all of a sudden everything's going to change. And it really doesn't. I mean, it doesn't change on a dime like that. But anyway, happy New Year to you. It's the first show of 2023. How you doing, and how'd you make it through the holiday season at the Montgomery Area Food Bank?
Yeah, I'm glad to be here today. We had a very good holiday season. Very blessed at Christmas just to get to spend time with my family. And being in the food banking business, I'm ever mindful when I have plenty to eat. There's lots of us in our world who don't get that privilege every day, and that's what we're fighting to make sure that that our neighbors don't have to suffer unnecessarily.
Let me ask you a question, and I'm assuming that everyone that asked you for something to eat this holiday season was served. Am I safe in saying that?
Yeah, and I will tell you, we even have so we distribute food many different ways, but primarily through our agencies or food pantries. Because otherwise every individual would have to come to us. So we have in our 35 counties, we have about 650 agencies or pantries through churches or other 501c3s. But individuals specifically in our area who come to us, we don't turn them away. Now, we tell them in the future, you know, that it's better to go through this agency. That's why the agencies are set up. But we box up 35-pound boxes of food, and we never turn anybody away who comes to us who says they're hungry. And so, yeah, we see it lots of times. We're not, even though we have agencies, and so we're giving indirectly to people, we do have people that show up our door all the time, and they are distraught oftentimes, because if they're coming to the food bank, it's because they just hit rock bottom, yeah. You know, and they literally do not have, it's not a matter of a choice. Like, well, I just don't like what I have. Let me go to the food bank and see what kind of better stuff I can get. That's it. They open up the refrigerator and the cabinets and there's nothing there.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful thing that you're serving people that way. And to know that you can take care of every request is huge. I guess my question to you is, you've been doing non-for-profits and you've been helping people your entire life. Has there ever been a situation where you could not help people? And I bring this up because, you know, my ex and I used to have the Bright House Foundation, and normally around this time of the year, we took care of special needs individuals, mainly children, but sometimes adults as well. And we used the Ark of Jefferson, Ark of Walker County. We went through and vetted our process, but there became a time where we just didn't have the resources. And it got big. Once the word got out that we were doing this, we started getting asked about grants and things like that. And we would usually go out and do the shopping. And we didn't, you know, it wasn't a Toys for Tots. Toys for Tots does wonderful work, not to take anything away from them. But we specifically asked for sizes, what exactly they wanted. We just didn't give a family a bunch of balls and footballs and a bunch of clothes that they couldn't use. We wanted to make sure that everyone was specifically served. And that's really difficult to do with just two people. Have you ever had a situation where you were actually, based on the institution or the business you were with, asked for something and you could not serve it? And how did you deal with that?
Yeah, it's very difficult. So and it goes back to on previous shows we've talked about is why it's so important to have the right heart. So if I'm the CEO, that means I can influence a lot of things. I can't violate law. I can't violate ethics. I can't do all those kind of things. But one of the things I can do is build a culture that says, we are going to be pliable, if you will. So, you know, I never want to get, like, we have the programs that we have and the services and the way we administer those services in a pretty set way. But there's not a one size fits all that meets every need. And so what we're going to do is when we find a situation that falls into our lap, somebody coming to us for some type of assistance, I'm going to I'm going to find a way to do my best to serve them. And if that means I have to bend and stretch and operate in gray areas, again, not violating ethics, but I'm talking about lots of times a program says, this is how you administer this program. Well, I may stretch the walls of that program a little bit to be able to include those families. And so that's why it's so important that we are able to balance. Like, you have to run a nonprofit as a business. We've talked about that. But you also have to have that heart that says, hey, if I've got these resources, look, we've got the food in the warehouse, and here comes an individual. And yeah, we're not set up to give them, but so we created these 35-pound boxes to say if a family comes, we can be able to give them one or two boxes of food that's going to tide them over for at least a week or so and be able to, until they can turn the corner or they can get to another agency for assistance. But the will and the desire has to be there. And I would say with most people it is, but I've seen some nonprofits who they're just crippled. Leaders are just crippled by, well, no, this is how we do it. And if you don't fit within it, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to change anything for you. And I just don't have that mindset. My mindset is I'm here to serve. And if I have the resources, I'm going to find a way to put those resources in the hands of those who need it.
Indeed. He's Michael Coleman, the Montgomery Area Food Bank. They do wonderful work. That's mfab.org. Please help them out. They cover 35 counties in the great state of Alabama. But this is more than just a non-for-profit show. This is about business. We got a couple of emails we'll try to get to here. info@tonycurryradio.net. info@tonycurryradio.net. You can hear the show at least 5 times Monday through Friday right here on the TKR app. And thanks to the 100,000 people that have already downloaded the app. Plus, of course, wherever you get your podcast, check out the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. All right, so you sent me, and I love when you send me some ideas because then I could just take it and run with it. How to measure success in 2023. I think the majority of people look at their bottom line. Did we make more money this year than we made last year? But there's so many different things that go into this. Employee happiness. We've been talking about toxicity in the workplace over the last couple of shows. Are employees leaving for better jobs, which could be looked upon as a good or a bad thing? Is the staff happy? Is there growth? Are you serving your purpose? You know, just because you got money in the coffers doesn't mean you're necessarily serving your purpose. Is there complacency you're dealing with? Are you keeping the door open? And is that enough for you just to keep the power bill paid? When you think about measuring success, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Well, I tell you, I've most of everything that I've gained in my life, I've gained from the wisdom of others. And I remember one time I had an employee and the employee was really not doing anything in and of itself wrong. But the employee was not doing anything really well either. And so I was sitting down and talked with one of my board members, and he was actually somebody who was a consultant for CEOs, high-level executives. And he really talked to me about the importance of having metrics. And really, that was a flashback to my military days, because you would have all these tasks to do, like these wartime tasks that you would train for every single day. And there would be these metrics to determine, well, you were trained in this area, or you still needed practice, or you were untrained. And it took me a while to really bring that over into the civilian world. But really what I'm now seeing is that everything I do and or everything that happens in this organization, we have to be able to put a metrics beside it to be able to measure whether it's successful or not. So, and that metrics can be qualitative or quantitative. It just depends on what it is. Because when you get in sometimes to cultural issues and is there contentment in the workforce, you know, how do you measure that? How do you know whether you're successful? You know, you could look at the number of HR complaints that you're getting or the number of people that have resigned without giving notice and going on to a better job. And But those things are, I know a lot of people are like, oh, I just don't need I don't want a bunch of reports and a lot of things to keep track of. But the reality is when I come into any organization, I have goals and I have a vision for this organization. And I could go out to somebody in the warehouse or I could go to one of the administrative offices and I say, hey, how have we been doing in this area? And they go, well, great. And I'm like, okay, how do we know we're great? Yeah. I mean, is that just because we feel like we're doing great or is that a pat answer? But I have people that I answer to. I have a board of directors, and I have a community of donors and volunteers. And when they come in and ask me questions, it's not just what I feel in my gut. It's they're going to want to know, hey, Michael, we said we wanted to do this. How is that coming along? I not only need to give them an honest assessment, but that honest assessment needs to be based on something. So right now, as a matter of fact, just over the holiday weekends, I've really been sitting back down and going through all our processes and seeing what don't we have a good metrics for, and just beginning to work through that process.
So again, I mean, I've seen this in business. I saw National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation enough times to realize that just because the bottom line looks really, really good doesn't mean your people are being taken care of. And I think there's a fine line there because it's easy to give people raises. You can't ask them to take pay cuts. It has happened at some level, and it's interesting because we just had the CFP go on, and a couple of years ago, when Jim Harbaugh was not performing at the level he wanted, he took a $1 million pay cut. Well, guess what? It seemed to have worked because he got him back to the Final Four this year. How do you deal with having success? And I thought you brought up a really interesting point. You're top of the line. You're the boss man, but everyone's got someone to answer to. You may own your own business and you may be answering to the man upstairs, but you do have people to, and particularly in a non-for-profit, you do have people to answer to. How do you balance that between keeping your employees? Employees know when your business is good. They can look in the stock page and see where your stock is rising, and they're wondering why they're not making more money. How do you deal with that aspect of it?
Yeah. So I think it goes back to some of the things that we've talked about, which is, so let's say, for instance, the employees are off, they're coming back. Matter of fact, as we're recording this, our employees are coming back tomorrow.
And where are you?
Say that again.
I said, and where are you while your employees have the day off?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. You confused me just for a second. Yeah, I've been here in the office since 5:30 this morning.
Attaboy, there you go.
But because I had a lot of things on my mind, and part of those was we don't have enough metrics in place to be able to gauge whether we're successful.
Yeah.
But I've had situations to where, you know, when an employee comes in, you know, I'm just at some point I'm like, okay, I don't want to overwork this employee, nor, you know, and overwhelm them with responsibilities, but nor do I want to underutilize them. So I'm trying to find the sweet spot. And again, the only way to really do that is to be able to communicate to them and have them, you know, keep an open dialogue back and forth. But when I come in and say, have a conversation with somebody and they say, hey, we're not doing well. And I'm like, okay, what is that based on? And lots of times it's really interesting what an individual employee will tell me, whether it's good or whether it's bad, based on how they see what's right in front of them, rather than being able to see what they're doing in the context of what everybody else is doing across an organization. And so that's why for leaders particularly, it's important to understand what not only what you want in each department, how to measure success in each department, but be able to measure the success of everybody as it's coming together, because you can have four of your six departments making good progress, but not making any overall progress as an organization because these other two key departments are held back. And so you can call an employee and you could tell a manager, hey, your department's holding us back. And they say, okay, well, what are we not doing? Help me understand. And I'm like, well, you're not churning out these widgets fast enough. And then they go, well, how many are we supposed to be churning out? And I would be like, that's where the metrics is. And so you sit down with them. And here's something else that's very important about this, at least very important to me, is that when you're establishing a metric, you're bringing in that manager and getting their thoughts on that. You're not just enforcing. You're not saying, hey, you need to be doing 50 widgets an hour. And without them saying anything or having any input, because what I found is as I pull these numbers out and I say, I'm thinking this, what do you think? And then so often they say, well, that's just not doable. And I say, why? Well, because of this, this, and this. And I go, oh, that's a great point. I didn't think about that. So let's come up with what is what does success look like in a quantifiable way, so that we can then understand, are we trending towards success? Are we moving in that direction? Or are we kind of stuck? And when you look at that and you're like, hey, I thought we were doing great, but it turns out we were only making, 40 widgets an hour, then the idea is not to look at your manager as a failure now, but you understand, wait a minute, there's something within our processes that need to be addressed. And if I didn't have the metrics knowing that, I may think, oh, 40's okay, 40's fine, and never get to that problem, never even see that problem, because I didn't have the metrics that told me, oh, I'm falling short.
Yeah.
So that's why everything needs to be measured in some way. Again, not to be taken punitively towards people, but to just be able to gauge, and it helps you as a leader understand where things are not operating as well as they could.
He is Michael Coleman. He's with the Montgomery Area Food Bank, MAFB.org. Check them out. They do wonderful work. He serves 35 counties in the great state of Alabama. This is a show about business, a mission-minded. Keep in mind your mission on your mind. We talk about non-for-profits as well. We got a couple emails here, info@tonycurryradio.net. I'll get into those from Tad and from Julie in just a second. I worked in the radio business for a long period of time, and we had budgets, sales budgets. Now, I was on the radio side. My whole idea was ratings. I had to have particular ratings. As long as my ratings were good, I was good, and they left me alone, knowing that it wasn't an exact science and our ratings would go up and down. On a sales staff, it was a little different. They needed to hit 100% of their budget, obviously, to keep the sales manager off their backside. And it was quarterly. So if they had a January, February, March budget, and their January was already at 100%, they'd start working on February, even though it was January 2nd, January 7th, January 8th, no matter what time you're listening to this.
Sure.
Knowing that there was going to be some people on the sales staff that were going to be short of their budget, and overall, the January budget wasn't where it needed to be. Does that make sense? So,
yeah, sure.
So we had some salespeople that would make their budget in the last quarter of last year. Maybe because their budget was a little lower than other people's. Certainly newcomers come in and they would just loathe. And it's human nature to give the least amount of effort for the most output, period.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it just is. How do you deal with people like that? How do you keep track of that? And what ends up happening is because salespeople will say this, listen, if Michael's asking me to go out and gain 200,000 pounds of food in the first quarter of 2023, and I do that, he's going to know what I'm capable of. And so next year it may be 3,000. And next thing you know, it's going to get to a point where it's unattainable, and then it's going to look like I fail. How do you deal with that in your employees?
Yeah, so it goes back to I spend the time, or I think leaders need to spend time. I try to do it. Now, I fail at this. I think I'm being successful talking about needing the metrics. I think I'm being successful doing this, but I find that sometimes I'm failing at it. But again, if the person understands what the organization is trying to achieve and what your goals are as an individual person, and you are an authentic person and transparent, which we've talked about, to me, that's very important in leadership, then they understand that they're not going to be punished because they are successful. Mm-hmm. And I know sometimes we get into systems like that, but lots of times those are the individual leaders of those systems. And they set up a dynamic that encourages that. Hey, work real hard, get all your stuff, but hey, I'm not putting one more bit into this company that I don't have to. But if you build a culture that says, hey, everything I've done in this organization and building this has taken into account your personal needs and your personal considerations, and I've developed a positive relationship to you, and then lots of times you can overcome that kind of negativity. So, for instance, or that perspective, I should say. So, we tell guys all the time the impact that they're doing, and that we want to get here. And they understand that usually I'm going to give them a goal that they can handle, that I don't come in one day and all of a sudden throw an unreasonable goal on them and make them work 12 or 15 hours or whatever. In other words, I'm trying to do as much as I can to make sure they're working their shifts, they go home to their family, they're not uber stressed out, and that I try to, number one, verbalize how much I appreciate their efforts and their contributions to the company, and that they understand that they're a valued person. And I'll tell you something else I try to do, and it's not always possible in the nonprofit world, but I try not to wait till somebody comes and asks me for a raise. So this happened just recently. Somebody was working so well and taking on so much responsibility. I'm like, I'm going to pay them more. I'm not going to wait for them to come. I'm going to tell them I'm going to pay them more. And I know that just runs contrary to people who are bottom line people. But what they don't realize is how important that having that right culture, it will tend to offset those who kind of just sit in the background and then just don't do more than what's expected of them or what they're getting paid to do. So I find you get a much more productive employee. You don't have people who are looking to only just do what they got to do and then, you know, get by. Now, I'll be the first to say I have friends in that business. And like you said, it's very difficult when you run into sales quotas and you know you're not going to get any more to continue to sell. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit of a challenge. But I think when you have a call, if you have established a culture that's only about the bottom line, you shouldn't expect your employees are going to do anything better than that. But if you build it right and build it in a relational way that shows that your employees have value, you're just going to get better buy-in. You're going to get harder work. You're going to get care for the company. And you're just going to have somebody who's willing to go the extra mile if you need it, because they know that you'll go the extra mile for them when they need it.
Yeah. And I love that. He's Michael Coleman, by the way, with the Montgomery Area Food Bank, formerly the Jimmy Hill Mission. This is called Mission Minded here at Five Times on TKR, on the TKR app. Thanks for downloading the app. If you're listening to it first run here and wherever you listen to our podcast, the Tony Curry Radio Podcast, we're on every major industry out there. There's not one podcast network we're not on. I love the fact that you're willing. I think you're on the outside looking in as a boss that is willing to spend money and invest in your wonderful employees by offering them raises, because that's just so rare. I mean, I get it, you know, because I know there's a whip probably above the GSM or the GM that you're dealing with. And that's so unfortunate that some people are really busting their ass and they feel uncomfortable having to go into their boss and ask them for a raise. And I think that's where the LinkedIns and the Monsters and some of these job sites have really been a force to be reckoned with for a lot of these people, because they're like, listen, if they're not going to give me my raise, or it's going to be very difficult, I know I'm doing more than other people in this office and I'm not being taken care of. I understand that if the business isn't making money, then I should be making more. But I also realize that if it falls apart without me, it shouldn't. info@tonycurryradio.net. Some email questions. You want to knock some out?
Yeah, sure.
Interesting one here from Tad in Huntsville. He said, based on the FTX, and I'm going to paraphrase here, based on the FTX collapse, if Michael Coleman was a crypto business owner, how would he convey to the public that the world is not coming to an end and that if they spend their money to get cryptocurrency with his business, that it's still good? That's got to be difficult, right? It's like a chicken restaurant getting salmonella, and all of a sudden you think that every chicken restaurant's got salmonella. How would you deal with it?
Yeah, so it's a little bit difficult. I will tell you that at one time I was I dabbled a little bit personally, not much. Didn't have much to dabble with. I dabbled a little bit with crypto in my ignorance, but I wanted to see what it was all about, and no longer in that game, not because I'm saying it's not a good investment. I wasn't comfortable just because I didn't know it. I saw a meme the other day, and it said, how surprised are we took us for a ride what a shame it is that we can no longer trust the people who are selling us fake computer currency. And it was just kind of like, it seems kind of silly. But I know that a lot of people become wealthy, and I know it's a real thing. I just don't have the chops to be able to delve into that world. But it brings up a bigger philosophical question, and that I will address, and that I feel like I can address. And that is, employees, you'll have employees who feel like the sky is falling. Regardless of what the cause is, you'll have people who feel like the sky is falling. And And so it causes them to operate in fear, and it causes them to operate in a panic. And I've told all my leaders, there is no single thing that they're going to do that's going to bring our organization down to its knees. Now, doesn't mean that it won't hurt us, doesn't mean it can't hurt us. But I said, we can't operate in fear. And part of that is, I'll be very open about, is I'm a person of faith, and I feel like that God's in control of things. And so whatever happens in life, I'm not Pollyanna about it. I have personal struggles and real life issues. But, you know, my background and my faith helps me see beyond the moment. But what I have to also do is, as a leader, is be able to maintain the calm in the organization so that if something negative happens, I have to be able to absorb that energy and then bring a calming sense of, hey, the sky is not falling. And so it's a little bit different in the crypto world. It's so public and it's all over the news, and that's a tough message to stay hold of. But probably for most of our listeners who are just operating a business or working in a nonprofit area, if you're a leader in that organization, you can really help stem off that panic and that hand-wringing mindset by maintaining cool, continuing to communicate. Don't go into hiding when something bad happens. Just be transparent, even if it's bad, and just communicate in a very calm way that you're going to lead them through that, and you do so.
Yeah, and I think you just said the word transparent. I think I saw a commercial for Bitcoin running during the CFP, and they made it a point that, hey, listen, we're a publicly owned company, we're well-respected, we have millions of followers, and we're totally transparent with our books and our budget. And I mean, I think that's, if this whole FTX thing has taught us anything, it's that, you know, listen, we've all been approached with Ponzi schemes. If it seems too good to be true, it always is. And so it's always an investment. Penny stocks don't work. There are outliers in everything in life. There are going to be people that get rich. There are going to be people that win the lottery. It's going to happen, but it probably ain't going to happen to you. We got one more question real quick. Julian Woodstock. She wants to start a non-for-profit 501c3 in 2023, but she keeps hearing about how the government has hired 70,000 new IRS employees, and she's scared about audits. Now, I would say this, as long as you're doing things right and you're keeping your books, then you have nothing to worry about. But she doesn't want to have to be dealing. She hears that non-for-profits based on a certain amount they earn every single year are audited all the time. Is that true?
I would tell you that is not my experience. She should not be. If there's something that is being led to do, just in her heart, she wants to make an impact. Boy, we need genuine people out there fighting for to help people in all sorts of different areas. I will tell you that's not the case, nor do I think it will be the case. Now, however, most nonprofits of any substance will have annual audits themselves. So we have an auditor who comes in, an independent auditor, who does it every year, checks the finances, checks our operations, checks everything, checks all our policies, all that, and then does a final report. So most nonprofits will pay to be audited every year. And now, I didn't do that when I first started out. I had a nonprofit who was very small, and I was told, due to the size of that nonprofit, I mean, the budget was only a couple hundred thousand, that we didn't really need to go through a full audit, because an audit can run you know, $10,000 to $20,000. But, you know, we're $5.5 million here, and it's absolutely essential because we receive USDA funds, we receive donations, all that needs to be audited. But it's not the IRS who does it. You have an independent audit, and then that audit is submitted to the IRS, and then they will work with your auditor if they chose. But I will tell you, I've been in this game a long time. We have never been audited by the IRS, nor do I personally know another executive director or CEO in the nonprofit world who's been personally audited by the IRS. And I will tell you, in the nonprofit world, nobody fears that I've personally talked with or that I'm aware of. It's never come up in conversation. And just like Tony said, if you're doing the right thing, you have no problem. If you make mistakes, You might get a fine. I've done that before. I've missed a deadline of submitting our annual report, and I got fined, you know, several hundred dollars. I was late one time doing the another form, and I got dinged a couple hundred dollars. That's normal because just the person you're submitting those into can issue you the fine. But in terms of a full-blown IRS audit, I just don't think, I mean, that's a tempest in a teapot.
Yeah.
So I would encourage you really to move forward in a bold way and not let that discourage you at all.
And I'd certainly say, Julie, go do your thing. And I just saw the documentary about Hillsong a couple of nights ago. Talk about a church that should have been audited. And there's probably churches are big business in this part of the country, not just in Alabama, but big business down here. And I love the fact that I can look at my missalette every Sunday morning and I can see, you know, the poor money that comes in. I can see the money that's given to the collection basket and everything else. And it's totally transparent and it's a wonderful thing. Mike, we got to go, man. Fantastic show. I loved it. Let's do it again next week.
I really enjoyed being with you and I wish everybody a great 2023.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.